Hi, I'm Tom Rogers, Vice President of the Qigong Institute. This is the sixth in the Qigong Institute series of podcasts about Qigong. The Qigong Institute is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to Qigong research and education and to educating the public on the immediate and long-term benefits of Qigong. All officers and directors are volunteers and there's no paid staff, so we welcome your donations to help pay for the website operation and ongoing programs like this podcast. This podcast is called Qi and the Healer Within by Dr. Roger Yonka, a doctor of Oriental medicine. This program is condensed from its original presentation at Omega Institute. People don't realize that they can heal themselves for free. Cultures that we consider primitive knew this. The medical intervention that we're used to is not healthcare. Rather, healthcare is self-care, self-healing, and health promotion, not intervention. Medicine is produced in your body. Listen to Dr. Yonka explain this profound, fascinating, and yet mysterious force that maintains our health. And now, Qi and the Healer Within.
We are going to investigate one of the most fascinating bodies of information in the world. Of course, I am loaded with biases about this, but I'm going to guess that you might have some biases too, or why would you be here? Now, some of you are here because you were fascinated with the offer that said that people can heal themselves. And it might have even said in the catalog something like, people can heal themselves for free. And if you lived in a culture that was experiencing a health cost crisis, and then somebody said, you can heal yourself for free, well, what would you think? It's very incongruous. Either there's something wrong with the healthcare system, or there's something wrong with me. And I guess you know my bias on that one. And those of you who pay attention to the healthcare system, maybe even pay a couple of $100 a month for insurance, and then listen to all of the depressing news about the healthcare system, are probably wondering how I could say this, that people can heal themselves for free. And by the time we get to the end of this weekend, well, by the time we get to the end of this evening, you're going to understand that, and you're going to start to get really excited. And I'm saying that because I've been involved in lots and lots and lots of these events, and it happens. People really start to get excited about the idea that you don't have to wait until you're sick and then go to the doctor and spend a lot of money to, in many cases, have your health problem get more and more confused over time. And it seems incongruous that ancient cultures like the Chinese, the Native Americans, the other cultures in Asia, and the Africans could have had a viable or relevant revelation about the truth that this thing about people can heal themselves for free. It seems unusual that people live in straw houses or little tiny apartments, people who do not have investment accounts, people that don't have at least two cars, some people that don't have PhDs, as we understand PhDs. It's hard for us as a culture, because of our training, to get it that people that are typically considered to be primitive could know something this important. And by the end of this evening, you're going to understand that it's not just an unusual idea of ancient people that we're talking about here, nor is it the New Age fantasy of this guy from California. Good, you didn't laugh then. So usually when you say you're from California, everybody laughs because of the fact that California people are, you know, on the cutting edge and don't often maybe know what they're talking about or seem a little loony. And so thank you for not laughing there. That was very nice. This is actually a concept, the concept that people can heal themselves for free, that your grandmother knew about, and that our rigorous scientific tradition is demonstrating more and more every day. Now, who has read an article in the newspaper about the benefits of meditation? Raise your hand. You know, you're not reading if you haven't seen it. You've seen it on 2020, and you've seen it on 60 Minutes, and you've read it in the newspaper. How many of you know that massage is making excellent progress in becoming a part of our healthcare system, and many hospitals have massage in them? Have you heard this yet? Raise your hands. See? You know about this. Now, how is that all happening? How does meditation get into the newspaper? Well, it gets into the newspaper every time we make a breakthrough about diabetes, high blood pressure, cancer, heart disease. Let me just quote you, I'm going to go a little bit to what I would call the conservative side for a while and talk to you about a little bit of science. And then we'll loosen up and go towards the more interesting side of all of this and talk about Chinese medicine. But when I talk about the fact that you can heal yourself for free, you've got to say, well, what's the medicine? And the medicine is a naturally occurring resource that is produced within your body spontaneously. Like when you cut, it heals. When you have your tooth pulled, the hole fills in. When you have the flu, you probably know about this, so you've been around long enough to know this. If you have the flu and you take medication to get over the flu, you're over the flu in somewhere around 4 to 7 days. If you have the flu and don't take medication to get over the flu, you get over the flu in about 4 to 7 days. Have you noticed this? Now, what's the trick here? Where's the magic bullet? Where's the remedy that gets you out of the trouble so you can go back to work and, you know, work too hard and not pay enough attention to balance in your life? Well, that magic bullet hasn't been discovered yet. Our culture has discovered how to interrupt disease processes. Let's say, for instance, you have pain. Well, we can kill that pain. And you may be sleeping all day and not feeling like you're wanting to do much. Or you may have high blood pressure. We can give you high blood pressure medicine. We'll terminate your libido and your desire to be creative. We can modify disease states. Is that healthcare? Now, there's an industry out there called healthcare that says yes to that. But I think that the people in this room would probably say, no, that is not healthcare. That is called intervening medically in disease situations. And intervening medical intervention is not healthcare. Medical intervention is literally intervening in a disease process to support the person and being able to sustain their life, but not typically or not always to sustain their quality of life. And I work with hospitals all the time, and I do a lot of trainings with physicians, so I'm feeling much more comfortable. It used to be 10 years ago, if I would say these kinds of things, physicians would get angry and leave. Are there any physicians here? Sorry. Go ahead and admit it. There's one, two, three, all right. Now, is there a fourth one back there? No, that was somebody scratching their nose. The physician community in the United States, listen to this. The physician community, I'm an acupuncturist, a doctor of Oriental medicine. I studied Chinese medicine, started studying Chinese medicine in 1971. I'm making a little point here. So now it's 23 years or so I've been in this practice. And it used to be that doctors of Chinese medicine were the carriers or among the carriers of good news about a relationship between healthcare and like self-care and self-healing and health promotion and so forth. But what I'm seeing now is that more acupuncturists are actually treating people who are sick and not paying that much attention to their health improvement program. And more MDs are paying attention to what do we need to do in addition to medicine to serve the public. There's actually a trend right now wherein our medical community is ramping up very rapidly to an understanding of the value of paralleling medical intervention with what we call health promotion. Now, there is some really good news. And so when I see these physicians in these workshops, I'm very delighted. But let's talk about the medicine within. let's just review what that means. And we're going to spend most of the weekend experiencing, literally experiencing. Before this evening is over, you will feel the medicine within. You will actually have a physical sensation of the presence of the healer within you. And it's going to be easy, and you're going to say, oh my gosh, why didn't I know this before? Or why didn't my mom tell me this? Or my teacher, or my sergeant in the army, or somebody tell me these things. And some of you may be a borderline on this. You might think, well, I think I felt something. But most of you will feel this, and you'll find it quite like a breakthrough experience. But before we do it, I want to describe what the Chinese called this, and then tell you about what we found in science in the Western world to demonstrate that this is real. The Chinese call the force within the human system that causes the spontaneous sustaining of health, or the maintenance of health, qi. Now, how many of you have not heard this word qi defined before? Raise your hands and be really courageous, because this is the moment that we get to... Nobody. Okay, two or three people. Good. So we'll do a little tiny discussion of what is qi. And it's important for you to understand that the Chinese, who came up with this word, are not exactly sure. And they don't care. They like not knowing. In China, the mystery is of great value. In the Western world, we hate the mystery. We want to solve the mystery. Like I found out the other day, just sitting in the airport, that we just discovered by looking at 20% of the sky, that there are 250,000 galaxies. 250,000 galaxies. We're not talking about solar systems here, my friends. We're talking about 250,000 galaxies in 20% of the sky. Do you know what that means? That means that there's a million plus galaxies out there that we can see and know about. And there are probably tens or thousands or even infinity more. So this whole idea of trying to figure something out, like the mystery, to get a handle on the mystery, you know, Newton and Galileo and then Einstein and all that crowd, when they got down to it, what they were really saying is that if we can bust this next thing, we will solve the mystery. And the Native Americans, thousands and thousands of years ago, did not solve the mystery. Galileo and his people did not solve the mystery. Einstein and Heisenberg and all the great names that are associated with the revelations that were based on relativity and quantum mechanics have not solved the mystery. They have done one interesting thing, though. They have proven that time and space and matter are not fundamental. This is really important. If you were going to develop a model of the world and then lean on it and say, I can count on this, this is solid ground, then you would call that fundamental. And we used to think that you could tell what was real in the world by being able to measure things like time, distance, duration, space, weight, all these things are related to time and distance and substance. But Einstein and the quantum characters have demonstrated that time and distance and substance are not fundamental. And they are arguing at the top of their lungs right now. I have actually been now at three or four conferences, and I'm going in a couple of weeks to an invitational. This is very interesting. An invitational of the Institute of Noetic Science and the Esalen Institute, which was really like the Omega of the West Coast, if you know what I mean. And the discussion is going to be on subtle energy and uncharted mind. And this is going to be some of the top thinkers in the area of what the heck is going on in the universe. What are the fundamentals? And the argument right now about the fundamentals is that the fundamentals could be something like consciousness or some absolutely boundless form of mind or some field of information or some kind of an energy phenomena. This is the description that the high sciences are currently debating. We're not talking about solid ground here, we're talking about debate. And every time we discover that the universe is endless out there, they have to scratch their heads and say, my gosh, you know, we're not going to just be able to look through a telescope anymore. You can't look down through a microscope and figure this thing out. The math is beginning to fail. The challenge of being able to bust the mystery is looking grim. The good news is that every other culture that ever existed on the planet Earth got it, that it just doesn't make sense to torture yourself trying to bust the mystery. And so what they did was they made the mystery into the wonderful thing out of which all else arises, and let the mystery be the mystery. And we'll talk more about that as we go, because learning to love the mystery is going to help you out. Learning to love the mystery is going to help you out. Because if you're afraid of the mystery, you're scared. Being scared causes tension. Tension causes a shift in the neurotransmitters. It closes down the blood vessels. Now you're making yourself sick. Fear of the unknown makes people sick. If we learn to love the mystery and understand that it's the source of the rising of all things positive and negative, all things black and white and everything in between, if we just let it be the source of everything that we can't quite figure out and that we're not afraid of that, now we're not getting sick because of the fact that we're afraid of the unknown. But that's not exactly where I want to go now with you. Where I want to go now with you is, what is this qi? Very simply, the Chinese have not settled on the definition for qi for one very important reason. It is not easy to do. And what modern science in the Western world is confronted with right now is exactly the problem. Because you try to nail it down and you try to call it fundamental, and then you try to define it, and then later somebody comes along and proves that that's not true. So the Chinese have got an interesting approach to this, and it's called loving the question more than you love the answer. And for those of you who have science backgrounds or who are policymakers or administrators in, let's say, hospitals and stuff like that, or school principals or whatever, or even school teachers, this might be hard for you. So I'm going to say it again. The Chinese have developed this strategy for how to deal with things that they don't understand. And it's called loving the question more than you love the answer. What happened was when we go to China, we ask, usually there's 30 people on the trip and we meet, you know, 30 people. So by the time the whole trip is over, we've probably asked each other, Chinese experts, Chinese doctors, philosophers, scientists, what is qi, about 1,000 times, just to get a feel for what the answers are. And the answers are always different. Like the artist will say, oh, the qi is my inspiration that causes these wonderful paintings to come out of me. Or the musician will say that the qi is the capacity of the artist to be able to be coordinated enough to make the music so that it sounds so beautiful that the audience has an experience, and that the group has that experience together, and it causes even more of this qi to be present. A doctor will tell you that qi is what is the reflection of the presence of life and vitality. So, for instance, there are a lot of people who would have come here this evening who didn't, because they are not well enough. See these blank pillows here and those empty chairs? Those are all people who wanted to come but decided not to because they didn't have enough. This is what the Chinese would say, is that the absence of qi is demonstrated very clearly. You say, well, I can't see the qi. But you know, I'll give you a metaphor, you know that the wind is blowing. You can't see the wind, but you know that the wind is blowing. How? Because the trees are rocking back and forth, and the roofs are flying off the houses if it's really strong wind, or little puddles of dust are flying up. How do you know about the presence of the wind? because of the effects of the wind. Same with qi. You cannot be, it is very difficult, most people cannot see qi, but you can feel it, and I will demonstrate this to you in your own body this evening for most of you, although many of you will say, well, that's not qi, that's just my blood, or that's my lymph, or that's my physiological this and that. And that's fine, because if you go to the China and say, well, what is the relationship between qi and physiological function? And they will say, that is all there is. That's the top end. That's the most important thing. Because when function is high, the qi is good, and it's ample, and it's balanced. When function is optimal, the qi is balanced, and it is optimal. In a person who's deficient of qi, then they're going to either have an imbalance in function to the side of incapacity or the lack of capacity. Like you may not, your liver doesn't have to stop working before it's not working well, right? I mean, a person doesn't die from fibrillation; they die from an extended amount of fibrillation. A person doesn't die from occlusion of the arteries. You can have your arteries occluded up to 85 to 90% and still be alive and maybe not even know that you have occluded arteries. You get up around 93, 95, 97, and then get tense, well, now you're dying because the oxygen is not getting to the heart and the oxygen is not getting to the brain. So you've got 90% of your health that you can lose before you lose your life, interestingly enough. And so the Chinese figured a lot of this stuff out without the kind of science that we have. And so for us to be able to say what is qi and nail that down, like this meeting that I'm going to be going to in a month where, you know, everybody's writing a paper and they're supposed to explain like what the mind, what the heck mind is and what the heck energy is in the universe and how it applies in our lives and science and so forth. And my paper is going to be about how you can answer those questions up to the point that you bump into the mystery. And then you have to let the mystery be what it is. Because it's going to expand. I'm pretty sure that the mystery will expand just as fast as we can discover little pieces of it. So the qi remains a kind of a mystery, even though it is, when you insert the acupuncture needle, it is the substance or the aspect within the human system that the insertion of the acupuncture needle is intended to have an effect upon. And in fact, we know that acupuncture has an effect, but we don't know what qi is, so we're not really sure that it's affecting the qi. But we know that it affects the physiological status of the individual. It reduces pain. It can, over time, have a positive effect on diabetes, heart disease, cancer, high blood pressure, stroke, all these things. And the science is just pouring in on this right now. Do you know, I started Chinese. I know I'm kind of rambling all over the place, but I hope all this is making sense to you. In 1971, when I started studying acupuncture, it was licensed in one or two states. Hawaii and Wyoming, believe it or not, were the first two states who did this. You know, Hawaii is obvious. Go figure on Wyoming. So for many, many years, the National Institutes of Health, you know about that? National Institutes of Health, we usually say NIH, would never gave the approval for acupuncture to be, I don't know, like official or certified or whatever. And in 1997, the NIH came out with what is called a consensus opinion, and that consensus opinion discovered or put forth from all of the institutes of the NIH that acupuncture was safe and effective. And this made a huge change in the way that acupuncture is being treated as a medical practice in all the states in the United States. Big policy changes, big relationship changes between doctors of Chinese medicine and doctors of Western medicine. The point that I want to make to you is that in that NIH consensus opinion, it says in the small print at the bottom, first it says acupuncture is safe and effective for a wide range of diseases and likely and safe and likely effective for a whole bunch more types of diseases. And then it says in the small print at the bottom, and we don't know how it works. Now, this is Western science finally beginning to get it, that there's value in letting the mystery go. They said, in this part of the report, they said that the Chinese talk about qi. We have no idea what qi is. We've got some ideas about the physiology. We know that ions course through the body. We know that neurotransmitters are shifted by certain kinds of things, and that acupuncture does shift neurotransmitters. We know this, this, and this, but what we don't know is how acupuncture works. What is the fundamental foundation of how acupuncture works? And we do not know what qi is. And then I don't think they said this, but I can tell you that the Chinese don't know what qi is, and they don't care, because they are talking about what they know the effects of the presence of qi is. So when the qi is balanced and ample, the person is well, and when the qi is imbalanced or not ample, the person is less well, or a whole lot not well, or even very sick. And there are many, many levels of this. So that's qi. Now, what is the medicine within from the Western point of view if what the Chinese call qi is not accurate, or it's mythological, or it's metaphorical, and it can't be defined, and it's mysterious? Then what can we say about the capacity for self-healing, which is mobilized by qigong? Qi is what we just said. Gong means to do work, like to put out a little bit of effort. So when you do yoga, you're doing gong. When you go and work in your garden, you're doing gong. When you think about, you know, like when you are trying to solve a problem and you're scratching your head and there's some internal work happening, those are all kinds of gong. The most important thing about gong is the fact that you like it. It's something that you appreciate. So qigong, the gong there means likes to put energy and time in to maximizing the qi. Gong that has to do with your garden, or, you know, like people who love to cook, that's a kind of gong. A perfection, a cultivation of a skill, a refining of a capacity. All those are gong. So when we talk about the medicine within, or the healer within, that is, mobilized, enhanced, quickened, nourished, improved, supported by the practice of qigong, what we mean is, from Western science now, I'm just going to go right down the list. And by the way, I didn't bring a copy with me, but there's a book up in the there's only a few copies, so all you scientists, rush out and get it right away, because there's only like four or five over there. But it tells all this physiology. So if you work with doctors, or if you work with teachers, or if you work with policymakers, and you want to be able to take back tools to be able to explain the value of qigong for children on Ritalin, for people with cancer, for your grandma who's wants to be vital for a longer time and stay in her own house instead of living someplace else, if you want to try to come up with a way to be able to explain this to somebody, I suggest that you let off on the idea of trying to explain qi and turn your attention to describing the healer within, to describing the medicine within, to describing the naturally occurring, spontaneously generated self-healing resource that exists within the human being from the very moment of their conception all the way through until the last of their life. And many would argue that there's a part of that healing resource that is universal and goes with you on beyond the window of that departure. So let's just go down the list. When you go into the qigong state, one of the things that happens is that your brain chemistry shifts. And you go from being in what is called the adrenaline-based neurotransmitter state to the choline-based neurotransmitter state. I'm going to say this all very quickly so you don't have to get too snowed by it. But I just want you to hear the words that you recognize from science. Neurotransmitters, adrenaline-based, choline-based. These are all things that science knows exactly about for decades. When you go into the qigong state, you leave the adrenaline-based neurotransmitter productivity state and you enter into the choline-based neurotransmitter productivity state, meaning that the body goes into a self-repair mode. what many scientists will call the spontaneous self-repair capacity of the human system. Those neurotransmitters which are created in your brain, in your pituitary gland, in your hypothalamus, in your spinal cord, some of these neurotransmitters are created in your gut. Remember that feeling you say, like, I got a gut feeling? Well, that's part of that has to do with the fact that there's a large, infusion of neurotransmitter generative tissue in the gut. And so when you're having a big, strong shift in the kinds of neurotransmitters that your body is producing, you feel it. Butterflies in your stomach, you know, the grip of fear, all of that has to do with neurotransmitters. And when you go into the adrenaline-based, tight gut, butterflies, tight shoulders, confused state, you are not in a healing state. You are in a disease can be producing, you are in a disease can be sustaining state. And it's a tragedy, because there's a way to get out of that state without having to leave your chair. And we're going to be doing a lot of that. Second thing, when you take a deep breath, go ahead, take one. Now notice that you haven't taken one since we got here. You have to wait till the instructor says. Now take another big deep breath, hold it for a moment, and then let it out very slowly. Like that. Now you can tell already, I know you can, many of you here, I mean if you're busy, you've been like tense on the road, you know, you've been traveling too long, you've got a headache, well, you know, we're not going to bust that right now. Or maybe we will, but probably not. But over the weekend I'll give you tools for how to eliminate that in your life. But most of you, go ahead, do it again, big deep breath. Hold for a moment, and when we start letting it out, let it out very slowly through your nose, and then notice what's happening in yourself and around you. Slowly now, out through the nose, slowly, 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 exhaling, relax, maybe even close your eyes, drift, drift, drift. Yeah, that's it. And then go back to very normal, easy breathing, and notice that right there. Okay, and then your attention back here. I would bet that if we would go around right now, and we won't because I want to do it a little bit more seriously in a few minutes and get some impressions from you, but if we went around the room right now, that probably 25 or 35% of you would say, yeah, I noticed something. Well, certainly I get a little calmer, and I can hear nature, and when I hear nature, like the birds singing, it makes me even calmer still, and I know that when I am calmer, I do feel better, that kind of thing. We're not talking mystical here. We're talking very, very simple, practical here. So when you take that deep breath, what the heck happens? Well, there is so much going on in there, you're going to be amazed, and we'll talk about it very briefly. First of all, to take a deep breath, you have to decide to, right? I mean, you would have had a couple of deep breaths before I said you should, otherwise. But you didn't. You know, we're all glued to the thoughts, and I love it, and I really appreciate your interest and so forth. But when you're that interested, you're not in a healing state. And I'm going to actually dialogue with you and teach you about how to be able to listen and be in a Qigong state at the same time. Some of you already know what I mean, and you can. Anybody who here is aware of what I'm talking about, you go ahead and use that. Qigong, simply relax, adjust your posture, relax, deepen your breath, and clear your mind. And if you don't want to keep listening, don't. Just do Qigong. That's what you came for anyway. And if you do want to listen, then say, can I sustain this somewhat modified posture, keep my breath focused, keep my mind clear, a little bit clear, and still listen to this guy? Yeah, you can do that. So now that's called lecture with qi. Lecture with qi means that my intention is to be pouring qi out into this room every moment that I'm with you, and your intention is to every moment that you can possibly get a grasp on it to be remembering that there's qi everywhere. The qi is free. And that you can tap in to your experience of that any time. Even while you're driving or, you know, probably not negotiating with your insurance company on the phone. But most times you can say to yourself, well, what could I do to be practicing Qigong in this moment and be able to do that? It is stated frequently in the tradition of Chinese medicine and Qigong and self-healing from China that the greatest teacher is the practice. That's right, no PhDs, no highfalutin experts, just you and your experience.
This has been a talk by Dr. Roger Janke, spelled J-A-H-N-K-E. Dr. Janke has been at the forefront of promoting Qigong and Tai Chi for over 30 years. He's a co-founder of the National Qigong Association, a licensed Oriental medical doctor, author of several texts on Qigong and self-healing practices, and an international lecturer known for informative and interesting presentations. For more information on seminars and training offered by Dr. Janke, visit his websites, iiqtc.org and feelthechi.com. That's F-E-E-L-T-H-E-Q-I. His trainings will be of special interest to those who would like to change careers to be a part of the healthcare revolution, such as yoga teachers who want to be certified in Qigong and Tai Chi. The Qigong Institute is run by volunteers, so donations are greatly appreciated to support Qigong Institute programs and the operation of the website. We also invite you to find out more about Qigong at the Qigong Institute website, qigonginstitute.org, where Qigong is spelled Q-I-G-O-N-G.